Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And a very good evening, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. Lots to get through, as usual, and as usual, we shall start with what's to see in the night sky, coming up very closely now to the summer solstice. Yeah. The skies don't get very dark, but more of that anon.
Although Venus is quite good.
Oh, you can't miss it, can you?
You cannot miss it. It's the one that appears first. Mercury first. It is deep in the glow of sunrise, brightening from magnitude plus 0.2 to minus 0.3. So that's a good variation. And if you want to see it, use binoculars and try well to the lower left of bright Jupiter. So you want to catch that. I'll tell you where that is in just a minute, because they're virtually the same. So Venus minus 4.4 in Cancer at the moment, which is a brilliant, brilliant sight to see. It's the evening star in the west from twilight into late evening. It's not quite as high in the dusk as it was a couple of weeks ago, of course, but that doesn't set it back until about 1.5 hours after full darkness. Yeah, and I've been watching that over the last number of weeks now because it's been super weather around here and everywhere else. Venus starts the week nearly in line with Castor and Pollux. Now, I was watching this because I was on a different latitude last week for a few days, and Venus was so nearly in line with Castor and Pollux down there, where there's a definite angle from this latitude. So we're about 53 point something. Yeah, I don't know what it is down in the Spanish end, but it's remarkable. And of course, over to the left is Mars as well, so it's quite an interesting thing to see.
I think Madrid is at 40.
Mm.
You're a bit further south.
A little bit 30.
30 degrees.
Yeah, it would be, I suppose, yeah. Yeah. When you think about it. In a telescope, Venus is a dazzling little half-moon, although it doesn't look like it. With the naked eye, it looks like a ball just starting to show signs of turning into the crescent, a big, big crescent. It enlarges a little every day while waning in phase, of course, and it will become a bigger, thinning crescent, dropping lower until it's lost from sight in mid to late July. So that's not that far away when you think about it. They creep across the sky the wrong way for us at the moment. Mars is 1.6 in the magnitude scale, so it's quite dim. Still easy enough to see. It glows weakly in the upper left of Venus, as you will see that. And I've been watching that as well, but it's going to disappear fairly quickly as well. And Mars and Venus will reach a minimum separation of 3.6 degrees on June the 30th. So they're creeping closer and closer together at the moment. And they're going to start to draw apart again. So they're going to pass each other. So which one goes faster? Venus will be going faster because it's closer in. Mm-hmm. So it'll undertake. And they're quite interesting to watch these as they come up to the final days of getting closer and closer as well. Jupiter is low in the east as dawn brightens, so it's a morning object, and it is easiest to see about 60 to 45 minutes just before sunrise. Saturn is well up in the southeast as dawn brightens, and it might be easiest to see about 60, again, about the same time just before dawn. And where else have we got? Uranus, magnitude 5.9. It's hidden still, low in the sunrise. Neptune, 7.9 at the Aquarius-Pisces border, is low in the east-southeast before dawn begins. So still, I think the only one really to watch is Venus.
And if you can't miss any of
Venus. You cannot miss Venus. It's the brightest one in the sky, the one that appears first. And not so long after that, you will get to see Castor and Pollux beside them, which are quite nice to see. It's a good pointer in the sky. And he was also saying that the International Space Station has disappeared out of our evening skies from the May the 26th, but I did get to see it down at about 38 degrees or thereabouts down in the south of Spain. And we would normally go out our back door and look south, and then it would come in from our right to left, so the southwest to over the sort of the northeastish type of direction. But the other way, you have to reverse totally. And it took me one hit. I missed it the first night. I said, where's that gone? Because I was looking in the same direction. And I said, no, this is wrong. So it comes in from the northwest, so you have to point north and look in from the left and watch it go into the east. And it was extremely high at 77 degrees as well. So I did.
I'm sure they have lower passes as well.
Oh, they do.
I was caught out a few years ago too, and I was actually in Hungary, and I knew the time to go out. And and of course, and automatically I look, head face out and look from over to the west on my right hand side. But it took me a while to.
I know.
I think somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, "That's slightly behind you there."
It was an oops moment, I think. But it's remarkable to see this first time I've seen it down from a different climb as well. And yes, it does. Indeed, it does come in at lower altitude, but they were going behind buildings.
But that was a high altitude, and
it was terrific. It was 77
degrees. To be behind you.
It was terrific. And there's a good 5 minute pass as well on one of the nights. So it was pretty, pretty good. So there we go. Our international in our sky is back in July the 9th until July the 27th.
You can't see it at the moment. It is passing over but Ireland at the moment, but during the day. So can't see it. Far too bright. But of course, you can see the moon, and it's, you can't see it at the moment. It's not above the horizon here from our vantage point here in Dublin, but it will rise in the early hours of tomorrow morning. Just after 1 a.m. tomorrow morning, you will see a 90% waxing gibbous moon, because we had the full moon a few days ago, and it will be due south just before 4:30 tomorrow morning. It'll just have shrunk very ever so slightly to 89%. And when it sets tomorrow, just before 8 a.m., it'll have shrunk another 1% to 88% gibbous moon as we head towards the third quarter moon, which will be on Saturday the 10th at 8:31 p.m. to be precise. Now, as we mentioned earlier, the sun, we are heading towards the summer solstice, but the sun will rise tomorrow in Dublin at, would you believe it, 4:59 a.m., 1 minute to 5 in the morning. Of course, with the long twilights, nautical and civil twilights, and astronomical twilights, it's bright, bright much earlier than that. Local noon in Dublin, that's when the sun is due south, crosses the meridian, and it's at its highest is at 1:23 p.m., which is 1 minute later than a week ago. And then setting 7 minutes later than a week ago tomorrow at 9:48 p.m. And from then, after that, we'll have civil twilight until 10:39 p.m. And from then, we'll have nautical twilight until just after midnight, when nautical twilight will, or when astronomical twilight will begin. And we'll have astronomical twilight all night until we have the sky begins to brighten again a mere 2.5 hours later, about 2:45 on a Thursday morning. So we have no astronomical night at all until about the 6th of July, I believe. No, it's not right, actually. It's about the 30th of July. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is the 30th of July. There or thereabouts. What does that mean? Well, that means we'll have 12 minutes more daylight than we had a week ago. Tomorrow, another 1 minute and 34 seconds extra between sunrise and sunset. When the time between sunrise and sunset, that'll be 16 hours and 49 minutes. And I don't know what you give it. Saturday, if you're up bright and early, very, very early, it's a bit of an unsocial hour. If you're looking for Saturn, it will be 4.5 degrees to the upper right of the moon on Saturday morning, but
quite hard.
Not for me. not on a Saturday morning, anyway.
Now, the other remarkable thing that I noticed as well is you mentioned sunrise is around
4:59, just 4:59, before 5 tomorrow morning,
Down in the other, because we have the hour ahead as well, and Spain effectively is GMT plus two, or we are just GMT plus one. So the sunrise down there was 6:59 for tomorrow morning, where we're 4:59. So that's 2 hours of a difference. It's very noticeable. Because it gets bright here very, very quickly in the morning.
Yeah, but they're not too far. The latitude is not that different, despite the fact that they're 1 hour ahead.
Mm-hmm.
That makes up some of the difference. And also, as you know, for a lot of people who go down there in the summertime, you'll notice it gets a lot darker
earlier
than it does here. I was out for a short ramble the other night, just after 11, and the sky was still bright. Amazing. I love this time of the year from that point of view.
I'm the same, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Get the grass cut.
Yeah. Anyway, no excuse now at all the dry weather.
Not a bit, no. We had a launch yesterday. SpaceX launched their Dragon cargo capsule to the space station and then landed the rocket back at sea again. So it threw it up into the sky, parted company, and the bit that went up, and the bit that came down, back onto the rocket pad, back in the space. So everything else went there. So it was only 9 minutes later, after takeoff, that the Falcon 9's first stage came back to Earth for a pinpoint touchdown on the SpaceX drone ship. It's a remarkable feat to have these reusable things as well. So everything has gone well there. So it's not sure when it's supposed to dock, actually. I didn't look that bit up. It's about 18 hours afterwards, so we're probably there or thereabouts. So 10 to 9 tomorrow morning, it should dock with the space station as well. It's just time to just find out what the rendezvous was, but there we go. Anyway, it's carrying about 7,000 pounds, which is 3.175 kilograms, 3,175 kilograms of science investigation supplies and provisions for the station's crew. And it was delayed by 2 days, actually, just because of weather, but everything has gone well. And it was launched from the Northrop Grumman's Cygnus ISS resupply vehicle, NG-19, which prompted NASA to transfer some of that the mission's intended cargo to Dragon in order to keep the space station cash from diminishing too much. Now, we don't want that because there were 11 people up there as well, up to just recently. So a few of them came back just over the weekend as well. So,
I read briefly actually today the Chinese Shenzhou 16, is it, mission? They landed back the other day, but they've been replaced by a new crew. But I don't have any more news on the Chinese space station at the moment. Thank you, Alan, for your text. Actually, I was just saying to somebody, explained the other day that the long twilights we have here, but when you're when you're nearer the equator, the angle, the sun goes down at a much more sharper angle.
It is.
And you don't get these long twilights like we can get here. It can be very bright, and then an hour later, it can be very dark. So, that's the way it is. Yeah, the nearer you get to the equator, the shorter the twilights, and of course the less of a difference between the solstices and the equinoxes. Actually, I was looking at the sunrise, and I'm going way off the point here now. But anyway, some time ago, Singapore is 1 degree north of the equator, and the difference in the sunrise, the time of sunrise at any time, it never varies by, I think it's less than an hour.
That's remarkable,
Whether it's summer, well, they don't have summer and winter, of course, because they're on the equator. They are in the tropics.
That's an interesting point. You wouldn't have thought that Singapore was, but you do know that was humid. Mm-hmm. 95% humidity down there. But I should maybe go back to the globe and have a re-look at the geography missions that we used to do. Where is this? Where is that? What city is here? What's the capital of that? You know, so we should just reinvent ourselves on the globe. Now, I don't actually have a globe at home, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as Alan rightly points out, generally speaking, it'll be 6 a.m.
Yes.
Sunrise be about around about 6 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
no matter what time of the year it is, and sunset around about 6 p.m.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's correct,
yes.
True. Now, scientists were still talking about going to Mars at some stage, and living on Mars wasn't exactly a childhood dream for a lady called Kelly Haston, though she's going to be spending a year preparing just for that. She's going into a participation exercise simulating a long stay on the Red Planet, and at the end of June, she is going to be one of the four volunteers stepping into a Martian habitat in Houston in Texas that will be her home for the next 12 months. It must be quite exciting, that, really, when you go into that type of thing. And all the participants will face equipment failures and water limitations, and the space agency has warned, as well as some surprises, according to Haston. So their communications with the outside world will suffer from delays that exist between Earth and Mars, which is brilliant, which is up to 20 minutes one way and the 40 minutes two way. So if you send a signal, they're going to simulate that as well, so it takes 20 minutes to get there. So she's very excited about the whole thing. And we will try and keep an eye to see what she's at over the course of the next year or so. So that's the end of June. I'm not sure what date exactly, but we'll, as we get closer to that, we'll let you know and keep you into the loop.
Thank you, John. You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. You can also catch us live on dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. Now, one of my other favourite subjects, aside from astronomy, is gastronomy. It can't beat a bit of gastronomy and astronomy. And as you probably know, when the first astronauts went up, and they were fairly short missions, they had the food that they had was either reconstituted, well, the very early ones, basically in tubes like toothpaste and fish. And after that, a lot of reconstituted stuff. But you can't beat a good fry up there, can you? So, and in the long missions now, there is a possibility, there are some experiments being done with how to fry in low or zero gravity. There's a program going on by ASA, and they're looking at different frying methods in microgravity. And they say when you're frying, you have those bubbles, but because there's no buoyancy of gravity, they're afraid there's a possibility that the bubbles of the oil or the gas would stick to
anything,
or underside, underside of, say, if you find a piece of meat, and that therefore it wouldn't cook properly, because the oil wouldn't be, or whatever it is you're using to fry, wouldn't be in contact with the meat, and that it would end up undercooked or more steamed than anything else. But they've designed different types of technique, and one of them is a novel experiment, a carousel-type apparatus, which has been designed to be safe in weightlessness. And they've tried this on the Vomit Comet, the aircraft that does parabolic loops to simulate zero G and the gravity on the moon, which is 1/6 of Earth, and on Mars, which is 1/3 of Earth. And they filmed the frying process with high speed, high resolution cameras, captured the bubble dynamics, such as the growth size, growth rate, the size and distribution, as well as the escape velocity from the potato, the bubble speed, and the direction of travel in the oil. And they may have actually got it cracked. They think they will crack.
Very good.
They'll be frying eggs, yeah, I suppose, as well. But there will be a way. In zero G, you can take out a normal frying pan with some oil on it, because it's just going to float away. So, good news for astronauts, they might be tooking in to the full Irish before we know it.
There you go, black and white pudding and all.
Yeah,
there you go.
Can't beat it.
Now, I have to mention this, Ben. I found this during the week. There's a new galaxy called JD1, would you believe? Mr. Dixon 1.
No, I don't think it was named after you.
Yeah, it says it's JD1.
19 years on the astronomy show.
And similarly, the...
Where's my galaxy?
Yeah, no, a BE1. No, there isn't one yet. No, there's a JD1 here, and it's in black and white, and paper never lies. The international research team, led by UCLA, the astrophysicists have confirmed the existence of the faintest galaxy ever seen in the universe, and the galaxy again is called JD1.
Congratulations.
And fair play to them for finding this, because it's like a little dot. It's remarkable how they scan the skies for all these things as well. So the first billion years of the universe's life were a crucial period in its evolution. After the Big Bang, approximately 13.8 billion years ago, the universe expanded and cooled sufficiently for hydrogen atoms to form. And this is where it sort of all gels together. So, of course, hydrogen atoms absorb ultraviolet photons, and they're able to see this through the ultraviolet areas of the telescopes. So that's interesting as well. Just remember JD1.
Obi-Wan. You'll never let me forget.
Yeah, indeed. Now, this one is also very interesting. And a new supernova has been in, it's been visible in the night sky for the last, where are we now, since May the 19th. And it's in, and I couldn't find M101, which, believe that, in my Patrick Moore book. But Ben Emmett, being the person that he is, knew exactly what it was. And if you go into Alcair, is the first one of the arm of the plough. That's the first one on the left,
the handle on the plough.
And then we have the double star, Mizar and Altair. And if you take a little equilateral triangle just above those two inwards, you'll find M101. And this is something, if you hadn't had a chance to observe the new supernova, exploded on the May of 19th, just gone past. And it's in what's known as the Pinwheel Galaxy, so it's easy to find as well. And it's known also as M101. It also has another name as well, with an NGC number, which I have lost.
It's here. It's a four-digit number.
It's 4-7-9-something, 9-5, I think. So how long will this supernova be visible in the night sky? So they don't know exactly, but they reckon about 100 days. So that must have been some explosion up there. And it's to the left of the pinwheel. So it's on the little spiral arm, which is over to the left as we would be looking at it.
Yeah, I've seen, photographs before and after, and the little extra bright dot on one of the edge of the galaxy.
Been a few of those. Dave Grannon found a supernova in the plough as well, but it only lasted a day or so. So it wasn't as big, but this one could last for 100 days or even longer. If you haven't had a chance, you will need to see it through a pair of good binoculars or a telescope.
It's magnitude plus 11 at the moment,
Dim-ish. Although, if you have a good pair of eyes, you will possibly be able to. You normally see it through the peripheral vision, these type of things. If you're looking straight at it, you don't actually catch these things. But if you look at peripheral visions, and the Veil Nebula actually is one of those that you can't look really directly at. And I've seen that through a 21-inch telescope. And if you look slightly to the right or left, you will get this peripheral vision of this. It's remarkable to see it. Can't be explained until you actually see it. But, there are loads more up there as well.
Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else is up there? Are there UFOs?
No, there are no UFOs.
Okay. But anyway, scientists at NASA have had their first ever public meeting on these, what they call now, we used to call them unidentified flying objects or UFOs, but they're now called unidentified anomalous phenomena. Basically things that today we can't figure out or know exactly what they are. So the space agency announced last year it was going to analyze observations in the sky that can't be identified as aerial or natural phenomena. And which, of course, has been a subject that has long fascinated many members of the public. And up until recently, any time it was mentioned to NASA, said, oh, no, no such thing. They all debunked everything, which made people more suspicious that maybe we were being visited by aliens. But they said there have been more than 800 events collected, reports there are over the past 27 years, of which about 2-5% of them are thought to be possibly anomalous. And these are defined by anything that is not readily understandable by the operator or the sensor, which is fairly wide for the definition. But I was just—I don't know—we saw a year or two ago they had it was actually on mainstream television, and there was, I think it was a fighter jet tracking something on his radar screen, but it was only three dots on the screen. It didn't actually see. I mean, could that be an electronic thingy? Could be. Anyway, he couldn't catch up with these three things he had seen. So we don't know. But NASA's work relies on unclassified material that's separate from a Pentagon investigation. Just to be add some further mystery to the case. And they said the two organizations who coordinate on matters of how to apply scientific tools and the methods. So that would make you think the Pentagon are investigating the real aliens. Who knows?
Yeah.
Have we time for more?
Where are we? Oh, we have plenty of time, we'll grant. Russia delays its launch of the Luna 25 moon lander until August. Its original date was July the 13th, and various reasons. They said that it would not be appropriate to launch the Luna 25 spacecraft in August. It would be appropriate, I beg your pardon, not from July, but to August. They've got a few other bits and pieces to attend to just to make everything go smoothly. And just before we disappear off, Ben, James Webb, its telescope spies the earliest complex organic molecules in the universe. So these particular chemicals reside within the galaxy that formed when the universe was only 10% of its current age. So astronomers have detected the oldest known examples of these organic molecules in the universe. According to the new study, and these chemicals, much like the ones that we would find in smoke and soot here on Earth, reside in an early galaxy that formed when the universe was 10% of its current age. So carbon-based molecules, that's where it started. So they really know how to look deep into space with our super-duper telescopes. And that's the James Webb doing its stuff. And, of course, the Hubble keeps it in view in our visible spectrum, whereas the James Webb is infrared, detects gamma rays, all that sort of stuff as well. So
I see, speaking of Hubble, that they are now, the images it takes, a lot of them now are being affected by passing satellites. Mm. When it was launched some time ago, there wouldn't be too many passing satellites to destroy or to affect its images, but now they have to dump a lot of them because there's white streaks going across them. Although it says at a very high altitude, but it's a very, I think it's a very elliptical orbit.
It said it wouldn't be disturbed by too many, but just when you get the good one, you get an aeroplane flying past.
Okay, maybe next week I'll cover the blame game. There's a lot of fingers being pointed at the delay to the Artemis program. We're now talking about 2025 for the lunar landing, but more of that perhaps next week. Hope to get to that. Thank you, John, for your news items. And it's time for us to say goodbye now, but our email address is astronomy@mcdfm.ie. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks to John for his news items. Thanks to James Sweeney and to Carla Lennon for their efforts in putting this show available on astronomy.ie and the podcast, and the people here who put it up as a podcast on SoundCloud. But that's all for me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China, 9 o'clock. Bren Lynott with Threads, and 11 p.m. it's Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe. And from midnight to 2 a.m., we've Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul with After Hours. But please join myself and John, and perhaps just John. We're not too sure if I can make it next week, but he'll be here anyway at the same time.
Certainly
with the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening, and say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.